Good evening and welcome, sports fans, to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013.
Wow.
I know, I can't believe it either, Bill. In any case, tonight we are doing another in our series of hodgepodge of horror episodes. And Billy was kind enough to inform me prior to hitting record that this is the 12th hodgepodge of horror episode, making it a dirty dozen of hodgepodgey goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So, what, I'm John Cassavetes and you're who from the Dirty Dozen, Bill?
Oh, from the Dirty Jim Brown.
Oh, man.
I'm a Browns fan, man. Cleveland Browns and Jim Brown, and or you could call, I could be Telly Savalas. I could be Maggot.
Actually, I could see you pulling off either one of those. Yeah,
I love that movie's such a blast, man. And it's so like, and the way they like kill those Nazis, it's like, damn, it's like.
You know what, Bill? I have a true confession. I have not seen that movie.
Oh my God.
And for, you know, I saw someone posted the poster for it online, like, just yesterday or sometime over the weekend. Maybe it was Carolyn Sames.
That's awesome.
But it was like, oh, that I was looking at that poster. And I was like, oh, my God, there's all these awesome people in this movie. And it's like, now I got to see it.
It's loaded, Johnny, loaded.
And I can get behind killing Nazis, so, you know.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this is a show where we just bounce back and forth talking about stuff we've seen recently, and Billy and I do not discuss what we've seen. We just kind of let each other be surprised as we go along, so hopefully that leads to some interesting conversation and interaction. So, in any case, Billy, do you want to lead with one of your movies?
I would love to, Johnny. Thank you so much.
Will you have this dance, Bill?
Jeez. Hello, Planet Earth. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Hello. Hello.
Anyway, this is a movie that was brought to my attention by a gentleman I worked with many moons ago. He had he loved horror films, especially the older ones, and he had survived 9/11. He was in the Twin Towers when I forgot which one when it was hit, and he had to walk 54 floors to get out. And he said it was the longest walk of his life, which I think most of us can like, you know, nod our heads to. And I remember he always wore the same clothes that he had escaped with on 9/11. And needless to say, you know, he had. You know, he definitely had some PTSD from that experience. But the one movie I remember him telling me the most about that really got me intrigued was 1957's The Vampire. And I'm not from Paul Landres. And it starred John Beale, and Dabs Greer was in it, and the beautiful Colleen Gray as Carol Butler. And it was an interesting take on The Vampire. And I really enjoyed it. And what was interesting is it's sort of like a meld of a couple of movies. Just like a Jekyll and Hyde type of aesthetic to it in regard to the doctor is trying to discover, trying to use vampire bat blood or to like, you know, cure people in some manner. But instead it brings out the animal instincts within. Okay. And if they don't get human blood every day, they become more of an animal. And I'm like, all right, this is pretty cool. And if you remember the vibe of the sympathy for the monster vibe, that's to me most profound in The Wolfman from the 1930s from Universal. That has that feeling in it too. But he had described a scene to me that he said was one of the creepiest and most frightening he had ever experienced in horror cinema. And I'm not going to tell you where it is in this, but there is a scene with the vampire out on the street, and I'm not going to say what he does or anything like that, but it lived up to what he said. It was it has some really creepy moments in it. It's an interesting take on, especially, you know, from back then you know, with the whole vampire mythos. So if you love vampire films and you want something a little bit different, this is the one for you. And it's also available on the as a double feature in the Midnight Movies from MGM.
Oh, okay.
It's with the Return of Dracula, so you get, you know, you get two pair of fangs for the price of one kind of thing. So, yeah, and Colleen Gray's wonderful in it, and it's really cool, and it's shot well. The who did the cinematography? That was Jack McKenzie, and some of the cinematography in there is really, really cool. He did Isle of the Dead, the Snowshoe Trail, and The Return of Dracula as well. In fact, he has 231 credits. So the man did a ton of work, and he captured some of that creepiness really, really well in this movie. So check it out if you love bloodsuckers.
Hey, Bill, you said it's kind of it's a bit unconventional. Where would it stack up next to, like, say, a Martin or something like that?
It's funny that you brought that up, because that's what I was thinking in my head. It doesn't have to do with that, you know, where somebody thinks they're a vampire, and it's like, are they not?
Okay.
But in its approach to, you know, vampirism, it's like this guy unexpectedly, inadvertently became a vampire by, you know, screwing around with science, you know, doing that whole thing. And so I just thought it was a nice new approach, instead of it being some, like, ancient virus or whatever, you know, that people get infected with, to being something that, you know, well, I'm trying to find a cure for something, and I discovered something far worse, you know. So it's pretty cool in that regard. I thought it took a lot of story chances for 1957, so.
That's cool, because, you know, you don't necessarily associate that era with, I don't know.
With innovation in horror, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had the Hammer horror films, and I mean, Universal had kind of died out by that point, you know, with their monster films, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of neat, because I feel like, you know, you look at the 70s and you see lots of innovation going on, but, you know, it seems like the 50s were still trying to play things sometimes a bit more safely. So that's cool.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Bring it, Johnny.
Well, Bill, you know, I told you before we hit record that I would recommend all of the movies I'm going to talk about tonight, but to varying degrees. So I'm going to start with the one I would recommend, but with the most caveats, probably.
Gotcha.
It's 2017's My Friend Dahmer, which was written and directed by Mark Myers. It's based off the graphic novel by Durf Backdurf, who is actually one of Jeffrey Dahmer's high school friends.
Wow.
It's an interesting little movie I kind of struggle a little bit with it. I thought it was well done stylistically, and the acting is pretty good, and some of what it has to say about, like, teenage relationships, especially if one person is kind of, say, maladjusted and antisocial, is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the performances are really good, and you might be interested, Bill, Anne Heche plays his mom.
Anne Heche.
And Dallas Roberts plays his father.
Ah.
And they're both good, but they kind of feel like they walked halfway off the set of a John Waters film, kind of.
Oh.
They're not, it's weird, because they're not, like, too over the top, but they're not quite earthbound either in the performances, so it's a bit odd.
You think that's due to Mark Myers and what he wanted them to do? Because, I mean, Anne Heche is freaking amazing, man.
Well, and, you know, I'm not, she is actually really good in the film, because she's playing a very kind of neurotic character who's not very self-aware. I guess that's a contradiction, but she's just very like, she's not concerned with her sons, And there's, I'm guessing there's some accuracy to this, but there's mention that she spent time in an institution, which mm-hmm. might explain some things. But yeah. You know, it's an okay movie. I don't regret having seen it. Ross Noble plays the young Jeffrey Dahmer, and he's very good. He's very there's definitely this void of emotion that he depicts really well, but I think that's also kind of the crux of the problem with the film.
Is that you
never seem to get too deep into anything, kind of. There's like this trail of breadcrumbs, but you're kind of left to make up your own mind. And I don't know if the graphic novel goes into more like speculative detail on Mr. Backdurf's end, you know, if he's like has little asides or thought balloons or whatever that are going through the book, that maybe shade in some of what he might have been thinking during the course of their friendship. So it's an okay movie. It wouldn't be a high recommend to me, but if you find it streaming for free, like on Amazon or Netflix or something, I wouldn't say not check it out. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. I think you spared me some time by, I like that. I took it as a warning.
Well, actually, just as an interesting aside, Backdurf in the film is played by Alex Wolff, who is sort of an up and coming young actor.
Mm-hmm.
He played one of the bombers of the Boston Marathon in Patriots Day, and he was also in this year's Hereditary, which has been getting a lot of attention in many circles. So there's that.
Gotcha. Oh man, that's cool. Well. I'm going in chronological order.
Okay.
I wanted to pick a movie. I know a lot of people are, you know, we were talking about, you know, Tales from the Hood 2 coming out.
Yes.
You know, people, I think, enjoy horror anthologies because it's short, sharp, to the point. You don't have to worry about lame second acts and all that stuff. So a lot of people have been talking about Creepshow, Creepshow 2, you know, which is great. Tales from the Hood, which is great, but I think they're missing one, and that's wonderful, from the UK, from 1974, and that's From Beyond the Grave. It's directed by Kevin Connor, and it stars Peter Cushing, Donald Pleasence is in there, David Warner, Leslie Ann Down, you know, it just, like, the list goes on of these really fantastic people, and it's a really cool story that... anybody who watched Friday the 13th, the series, the ill-named series, you know, from Canada, you know, it's like, hey, did they get the idea from this? Because it's a shop owner who, and the owner of the shop is the proprietor, and that's Peter Cushing. People come in, and if they're not cool, or if they, like, look at something and they swipe it, suddenly something happens to them. And... all the stories are really wonderful. I enjoyed them all. Like The Gatecrasher, The Door, you know, they're really cool. They're poignant. The Elemental, An Act of Kindness. And it's about four different stories. And, of course, the unifying element is Peter Cushing. And the end is very cool, too, how they bring the story together. And I thought it was just really well mapped out, well thought out. And it had a really cool feel to it, a good vibe. And I think this was when, this was just like a couple of years after his wife had passed away.
Okay.
And I know, like, you know, anybody who knows his story, you know, Peter Cushing was, you know, very, very forlorn, you know, very taken aback by it. And,
you know, Bill, just not to interrupt,
yeah.
But...
No, go ahead.
On the audio commentary for the Shockwaves Blu-ray, the director, Ken Wiederhorn, I think he mentions it once, because they start to talk about Peter Cushing, and they mention at some point that he was actually seeking out the advice of psychics to try and get in touch with her.
Yeah, he was very much at a loss. He was extremely somber and melancholy. Loved her very, very much. And I think him doing, you know, films after that, you know, kept him alive. Which I'm glad he, you know, except for the loss, of course, you know, for anybody who has to go through a loss like that, but to lose their partner. But, you know, it was just cool to see him in playing a sort of different role. I mean, you know, he was older then, of course, a little bit older, and he was taking sort of like, you know, stepping back a little bit. But, you know, he's like the glue that holds the whole story together. So if you love anthologies, you love Peter Cushing, you want to see something awesome, this is it. Check it out. Great movie.
Bill, what year did you say that was from?
74.
74. I actually haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's, you got to check it out. It's a great UK film. Just 97 minutes long. Kick back, relax, enjoy the ride. You know,
you mentioned Tales from the Hood, and, you know, I saw that for the first time recently, and we talked about it with Tracy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bill, it really drew into sharp focus for me how lazy a lot of modern anthologies really are. Like, I'm talking within the past decade or so.
I know what you're saying.
In the horror genre, it's just like, man, the stuff is so lazy by comparison, you know, compared to what they were doing like back in the 70s, or, you know, even before that, you know, even with Creepshow, even with Tales from the Hood, you know, going back to Dead of Night from the 40s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool, tight stories, man.
Yeah, and it sounds like this one did a good job with, like, they did the good job with the wraparound, and, like, the stories mm-hmm. in between the sandwich was...
Oh, yeah, good through line.
Yeah, there wasn't... It was a nice mixture of ingredients, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, so that's from Beyond the Grave. Highly recommended. Enjoy.
And there's also another good anthology from that era, which I was actually thinking you were going to bring up, was Asylum.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think was like maybe 2 years before that, but it also features Peter Cushing.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
Yeah, oh, I miss that guy so much.
Oh, I love him, man. It's one of my favorites. After, like, yeah. Vincent Price, he's like, oh. Anyway, go ahead, man.
Well, not to take anything away from Christopher Lee, because I like Christopher Lee too, but if it were like a Twilight sort of thing and it were Team Cushing or Team Lee, I would be Team Cushing. Whatever that means. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Bill, I'm going to talk about a movie, and it might be a bit of a cheat, and I'm going to listen to you groan for a little bit.
I'm groaning already. Groan.
Well, I think it fits in, because I think the people who listen to us could probably have a healthy appreciation of this exploitation subgenre.
Oh, boy.
And that is the Women in Prison film.
Jesus.
Well, I wanted to bring this one up because Mr. A Fiend on Film, Dave Koenig, was sharing the Kickstarter for this film on his Facebook and Twitter pages. It's a movie called Amazon Hotbox, directed by James... Have you seen anything about this one, Bill?
I remember the title. I'm like, oh man, the title alone, I want that on a shirt.
You know what? I actually gave to the Kickstarter, which is why I got
Good
to
man.
See the, which is why I got to see the movie, because it's actually not being released proper until October 2nd. So this is an exclusive.
Because I want to see it, because Tristan Risk is in it, man.
Yeah, and she's got a pretty juicy role in the film.
No doubt.
Yeah, so it's directed by this guy named James Bickert, who did Frankenstein Created Bikers and Dear God No, which I haven't seen either one of them. If you look up the artwork for all of these films, the artwork is stellar. So
yeah, it is.
But in any case, it follows kind of like the standard women in prison template, where an innocent young girl is tossed into hellish conditions in an isolated prison, over, you know, ruled over by Ilsa-esque character whose shirt is always kind of halfway unzipped, played by Ellie Church, who's kind of rocking a KGB accent, kind of. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are problems with this movie. It's low budget, but
really,
you know, I gotta give the filmmakers credit for the way they did the Kickstarter, because the film was done. They were drumming up funds to make the physical products and the merch that would go with the physical version of the film, which right. I kind of like that idea. Instead of, like, you're giving money to something that hasn't yet been made, and then years down the road, it never gets made, and you never see, you know, not that it should be about the perks, but you're kind of paying for the perks as well when it comes to crowdfunding. So,
gotcha.
But it's a good film if you like that particular subgenre. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's got some good gore moments, and there's some innovative horror elements in it as well, that maybe recall like a bit from the Saw series. So, you know, and it's just, I think everybody kind of involved knows what kind of movie they're making, and you know, so there is that sort of freewheeling kind of seat of your pants kind of spirit to it, I guess you could say. So so I liked it.
Good.
You know,
it's what matters.
And I mean, Tristan Risk is one of the reasons why I was like, okay, I want to see her in more stuff. And
always do. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's a very versatile actress and performer.
She really is.
And she's a, you know, she's playing a character that's a bit different than the character she played in American Mary, for example. So she's kind of playing like the quote unquote baddest bitch on the block.
All
in
right.
this. So, and she's obviously really having a good time with it, just getting down, getting sleazy, getting violent. So,
all right.
Is she, Bill, do you know if she's going to be in the new Rabbit movie that the Saska twins are doing?
The new Rabbit movie, huh? Let me see. Hold on. Nobody breathe. Nobody move.
Don't breathe.
Let's see. Rabbit. Da-da-da. No, I don't think so. I know she's just completed Cuties, and she's in. She also completed Boogeyman Reincarnation.
Okay.
Velvet's in post production, and Lilith is in post production, and she has a short in post production as well. So,
Lilith is actually, I think, is that Jessica Cameron?
I believe it is. Yes, it is. Oh, this is not a good sign.
Uh-oh.
Jessica Cameron's in it with Tristan Risk, but it's directed by two people, and one of them is Alan Smithy, so you know what that means.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that means Trouble in Paradise.
Okay. All right.
Maybe that's part of the reason why it's been delayed. I think production... post-production began in December 2016, so...
Okay,
so it's,
right.
it's a troubled production, Johnny.
I guess we'll wait and see.
I guess we have no choice.
Well, in any case, Billy, since I threw things off the rails, why don't you take the reins back?
Oh, well, I'm going to take them back, and I'm going to spew hostility. I hate when someone takes a hammer in a horror film, and not a hammer film, but a hammer in a horror film, and they beat you over the head with a message, and and they use horror as a platform to sell their let's say fucking religious beliefs. And when I saw this movie, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's getting so heavy with the religious overtones, undertones, and everything else. And at the end, the first thing that the filmmakers do is thank God. And I'm thinking, well, you know, God's eye, I thought, was watching football. And, because the players are always pointing to the sky, although I heard a rumor that God really just likes hockey. And again, I don't know if it's a man or a woman or an it or whatever, but Six Souls from 2010, starring Julianne Moore and Jonathan Rhys Meyers. And it's funny because the story had some interesting elements to it. It had some merit, but it didn't, you know, it, one, it's a commercial horror, so it's not going to get dark enough, and it didn't. And then as the end, as things got closer to the end, it was just more and more of them laying on these thick layers of, you know, be a good, wholesome, you know, Christian-based person. And, and yeah, and it just, like, got really heavy, and I'm like, oh. And so if you're into that sort of thing, then check out Six Souls. And that's with the number six, not S-I-X. If you're not, you want to stay away from it. So like, that's like, it just got like, the suspense was that like commercialized Hollywood-based suspense that you know you can't get worked up over.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just like, oh geez, here's the music, you know, and she's running, and it's like, you know, you don't even want popcorn because you can't eat during this thing because you're like, this is like, it's just turning your stomach.
You'll fall asleep and choke on a colonel.
Yeah. Or a general. Or a major. But anyway. Yeah, it was really bad. It was a really horrible film. What is this? It was made in the United States by Måns Marland and Bjørn Stein were the directors. And it was written by Michael Cooney. And Michael Cooney wrote Jack Frost, and he wrote Identity, and that was part of the reason where I was like, well, I loved Identity, I think it's awesome, and it's like, what happened? Like, the writing went, like, within seven years, the writing went off the rails.
Sounds like he found Jesus or something, I don't know.
I don't know, and you know, if you find, you know, whatever, that's great, but when you throw out storytelling to lay down, to beat people over the head with a message, and you know, I wrote a script where that happened, and everybody called me out on it, and they're like, you can't do that, and I'm like, oh shit, I didn't know, I was so close to it, I didn't realize that I was bludgeoning people.
Yeah.
And you know, he should know better. You know, it's like, that's all I'm saying. You know, you know, but now he's been doing a lot of TV movies as of late. You know, that's all he's been doing is television after Six Souls. So I don't know if that says something, but...
Well, Bill, you said Jonathan Rhys Meyers was also in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two really good actors, too.
And Meyers crushed it, man. He really rocked his role. He really, really did. But, you know, it also gets into the whole... Nate Corddry was in there as well, which is really cool. But whoa, what the hell is that? How did that happen? My phone is off. What the hell, man?
Your phone is possessed, Bill.
I think it is. Is this friggin' Michael Cooney calling me? No, I'm just
probably
playing.
Man.
Yeah, probably. You bald bastard.
I think he's tapped our computers or something.
Yeah. But and Jeffrey DeMunn, he's fantastic in it as Dr. Harding. But it's another one of those. It's a psychological thing. Somebody's messed in the head. Check this one out. And of course, you know, Dr. Harding, you know, his daughter Kara, played by Julianne Moore. You know, yeah. She's a psych whiz person. So it's like, you know, and it's just like, you know, Hollywood reality versus reality, and just gets weird and stupid.
So it's kind of like one of those things where, like, you're kind of questioning, or the intention is to question what is real and what isn't,
no.
But they do a bad job of it.
No, the thing is, oh, is this really how somebody with a mental disorder is taken care of? And
oh, shit. Okay.
And then it gets into the whole, then it just becomes bizarre, but it's so contrived in its bizarreness. It's just, you know, like the acting's solid and the cinematography is great. The cinematography from none other than Linus Sandgren.
Mm.
who did La La Land, American Hustle, Joy, you know, stuff like that. You know,
holy shit! Okay.
Yeah. So he's fantastic. It's like everybody plays their part, but the story is just weak, and that's really a sad thing.
You know, Bill, it sounds a little bit like a movie that I think came out around the same time with Justin Long and Christina Ricci called Afterlife.
Oh.
That is a bludgeoning movie too.
Yeah, that movie took a it came out a year after that. That was 2009. But I would watch Afterlife because I gave that 2.5 stars. Six Souls was lucky to get 1.5.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean Justin Long's fantastic, man. That guy could do freaking anything.
Well, and Liam Neeson was in that one.
Sure, Christina Ricci. And it could have been great, but they just messed it up.
Well, it's the thing, if I had to listen to Liam Neeson say, "You people just don't understand," one more time, I was just like, exactly. Yeah, we get what you're trying to do, filmmaker. You don't have to keep acting
bludgeoning
like
us.
Exactly. You don't have to keep acting like we're Christina Ricci and we've never seen a movie like this before.
So that's
because I felt like it wasted her, you know, everyone's talents with that damn story. So
agreed, man. What do you got, bud?
Yeah.
What do you
good
got?
Good segue.
Nice and smooth. That's what we're all about here at The Last Knock.
You know what, Bill? I watched this one last week. It's a 2005 film from Japan called The Booth.
Booth?
Yeah, written and directed by Yoshihiro Nakamura. It's an interesting movie about a radio talk DJ, kind of like a shock jock guy. And the regular studio is under construction, so they have to relocate to this old studio in the basement of the building.
Dun dun dun.
Where, there's a prologue before, you know, set like in the 50s, where something bad happens, and it pretty much sets the. It's like, okay, part of me was like, okay, they're starting it like this because, all right, it's gonna probably go there.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it, though. It's very well acted. It's very well photographed.
Cool.
It essentially is just taking place in this one location, like the actual recording booth where the DJ is, and then the section outside of that where, like, the technicians are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some flashback scenes that take us out of that setting, so you're not quite asphyxiating with the characters, but it's a pretty well done film. I am a big fan of movies that take place in like single or limited locations, mostly because I feel like it forces filmmakers to get really creative with how they tell their story and how they keep it interesting. And exactly. not make you feel like you're just watching someone in a recording booth for 74 minutes. I mean, that's another good thing about this movie is with credits, it's 74 minutes long, which is like a really short movie. So,
oh man,
it sets up its story.
Jesus
and
it's Christmas.
What's up?
No, my phone keeps ringing, man. What the fuck? I turned it off.
I'm going to put you in the booth, Bill.
It's happening. My phone's on it.
With your phone, man. Yeah. But in any case, that actually does play into the movie because it's like these sort of ominous people are calling in with these ominous things they want to talk about. And the whole thing ties into relationships and love and like what's something someone said to hurt you and how did you get over it and that type of thing. So it's all very thematically rich. And the DJ himself is dealing with sort of the fallout of a relationship, let's say. And I thought it was well done. It's a little predictable in spots, but it really builds tension and suspense really well. And there's actually, it throws you a really good curveball at like the beginning of the third act, which I did not see coming. And I kind of respected it for doing it the way it did. So I would say check it out if you like Asian horror cinema.
Shit, yeah.
It's more eerie than violent, but I don't mind that. It just tells a good spooky story, and like I said, the production's really good, and I think it's worth a watch.
Cool, man. Does it pair well with Pontypool as a double feature?
You know what? I didn't even think about that, Bill, but yeah, you know what? I would. Yeah, Booth Horror. Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Radio Station Horror. Yeah, definitely. Those would make a good pairing.
Awesome. Oh, man. Well, I
guess... Honey the Cat is missing, Bill.
In Japan. Hey, we found your cat in Japan. What? Son of a bitch. That cat can move.
He's on Cat Island, Bill.
Yeah, he's on Cat Island, which is next to Monster Island, obviously. Next to that Dog Island from Wes Anderson. But anyway, holy
crap. I love that movie.
I got to check it out, man. I missed it in theaters. But
it's really good.
That's cool. Well, I have another warning here, and Greg Palko of Palko Designs on Twitter, he knows this one all too well, because we both love found footage films, so when I see a found footage thing, I wish there was a category on Netflix that said found footage, so I can watch them all instead of having to hunt and peck for this crap, but yeah. So I saw one, and I had an idea that it was like, but I dove in anyway, and I shouldn't have, and you're not going to either, because... I'm warning you now. It's Drew Kasen's. He's the writer, director, editor, special effects guy. You get where this is going. UK film Hungerford, and this is from 2014, and something happens to the town of Hungerford. There's like an explosion. People, it's almost like a rage virus thing, and it's like, holy shit, man, what are we gonna do? We gotta get out of here, you know. So it's one of those movies, and I haven't seen so much overacting in a movie in a long time. It's like everybody is so overly freaked out perpetually in this movie that you just want to walk in there with a baseball bat and go, you're going, you know, just take them all out with like headshots. And it's just really awful. And it's a shame because there's a couple of people. It's like, well, I think that person can act, but I'm not really sure because they're like over embellishing everything, overdoing absolutely everything. And Drew Kasen, writer, director, editor, special effects guy, Whiz Kid, all this stuff. He's also the star. Yeah, and he has this rocker hair from like the late 70s, and it's just like, what the fuck? And he would have been like a great missing member of like the Lost Boys with their freaking crappy hairstyles. And I'm like, what's going on? And but he is smart. He does a couple of really cool things with special effects in regards to like to make sure, like, if he couldn't pull off an effect, he would have the camera tilt or move or something like that, and you would get you'd have an idea what was going on, but not really see it. And I thought that was good on, you know, his part. But like, there's this one scene, and I'm sure most people in Western culture, if you have a back door that might have like little paneled windows, they're really small, they're really thin, and he has a guy taking his head and like bashing it against one of these, but he's doing it lightly, of course, because it'll just break. But the guy's doing it lightly, and there's blood on the window, and I'm like, that wouldn't. And I think Palko even brought it up. He's like, what the hell's that? You know, like, wouldn't happen. So somehow, some way, In 2016, he does The Darkest Dawn, another found footage. It's the sequel to this.
Oh.
And it's better, but it's better. Special effects are better. He still does some of his tricks, you know, with the, well, I really don't know if I can pull this off, so, all right, the camera's going to flip, you know, and it's like, okay. But I don't know where he got the money from. He had helicopters in this and stuff, so that's really good. But I guess other people aren't enjoying it either because, you know, Drew Kasen's rank on IMDb is plummeting rapidly. So I just think maybe he did too much too soon, whatever. So I think, you know, I think he just needs to maybe take a step back, take a breath, and you're like, the people were directed better too in the second and the sequel, but still, it's like, it's almost the same scene over and over and over again in a movie. Like, ugh. You know, these people are, oh my God, oh, what's happening? It's aliens, oh my God. And then they meet stupid, angry, awful, evil humans. Then they get away from them and they meet more stupid, angry, awful, evil. You know, it's like, come on. You know, so. So anyway, Hungerford, stay away.
Bill, you know what? You know how you can tell that that's a bad movie from the start? Is that the title is awful. Well, it's hard to even pronounce the title.
It is, but you know, he did what I think a lot of British bands do this. Like everybody's like, Portishead? What's a Portishead?
Ah, okay.
It's a town. It's a town next to Bristol where they're actually from, and I think maybe they didn't take it because another band had Bristol as their name. You know, there's other, you know, they use names of where they're at, you know, almost like naming a virus, you know. Like if somebody says Ebola, you know that's a place somewhere on a map, you know, because it's a virus and they all get place names. So he took maybe his hometown, you know. Maybe he's hoping to make the movie so he could get laid or something. I don't know.
You know what, Bill? You just blew my mind because I didn't know Portishead was actually a place.
It's a place, Johnny.
I've spent like the last 20 years thinking, what the fuck is a Portis? and why did they attach it to Head to make that weird ass name? Okay, all right.
Well, now that we solved that mystery, Johnny, give us another movie, man.
You know what, Bill? I had a lot of fun with Brian Taylor's Mom and Dad.
Oh,
have you seen this one yet?
That's been on my list for like too long, man. Now I gotta check it out.
You know what? It's another film, like, you know, The Booth was really short. This one is, like, under 90 minutes. I think it's under, like, 85 minutes, actually. So it's a breezy, fast-paced thing. Essentially, the parents in the suburban community, and it might actually be more widespread across the United States, if not the world, the parents start to turn to homicide towards their children. And it's just a lot of craziness. It's more or less an excuse to let loose with a lot of paternal and maternal craziness over the course of the runtime. And I have no problem with that. Brian Taylor is a half of the team that brought us the two Crank movies, which I'm a huge fan of.
Right.
And while I wouldn't say Mom and Dad is quite on that kinetic level as those films, it still kind of has that same comic book feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very over the top, very absurd. Selma Blair, who I don't think gets talked about enough, she's fantastic in this. As she's Mom, and Nicolas Cage plays Dad. And, you know,
Nick Cage, man!
You know, the thing is, Bill, I'm one of those people who feels like Nicolas Cage hasn't done much good in the past 20 years. And well, it's an unpopular opinion to have.
Well, not necessarily. A lot of people just, you know.
I think a lot of people are more like, oh, he's just, anytime he's in a movie, it's going to be fun at least. But I'm like, he's been in a lot of crap that hasn't been fun.
He's been in a lot of crap, yes, that's true.
And I understand he has, like, reasons for taking so many movies, but
right.
But this is like the first time in a long time where his cool uncle shtick kind of pays off, because I just think it's the script totally justifies him going over the top and going crazy, and in cool. that class in that classic Nick Cage and Face Off kind of way. So
oh, that movie's awful.
Oh man, I like Face Off, man. Oh,
that movie's so medically in.
Yeah, tell me ludicrous. Tell me all the scientific and medical inaccuracies. Oh,
just go on, with your freaking mom and dad shit, man.
I just liked it a whole lot, and I don't know if he's in the opening credits, so I'm not going to reveal. I was kind of surprised by a certain actor who we've seen in a lot of movies, Bill,
mm-hmm.
but he makes an appearance in the third act, and I was like, oh, that's fucking awesome. It's that guy who I like in all those movies.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So I think you should check it out.
Yeah, probably tomorrow night, man.
Yeah, so I really liked it. And Selma Blair, we love you. I loved her in Hellboy. So
yeah.
And she was also good in The Killing Gene, which is a film mm-hmm. that doesn't get about that much either. So.
Selma Blair.
Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, we go on. Well, this is my last film of the night, and this is a good one. This one surprised me. It's not perfect. It has a couple of issues, but I thought it was a great idea. And I know that the filmmakers wished maybe they had a little bit more money, but it's okay. So anyway, it's called Last Girl Standing from 2015. And I actually wrote a review of this, but it's a woman named Cameron, played by Akasha Villalobos. Her husband's in the movie, Nick. She survived a brutal massacre. She was the last girl. She was the final girl. So what happens to the final girl after the credits roll? So that's what this movie's about. And it's interesting. They do some really cool stuff in it. And I was really, really happy with the ending. And like I said, it's not perfect. I'm sure people are going to find fault with it here and there. But, you know, when you... It's a good one to just kick back and enjoy.
So, Bill,
yeah.
What would you say the is it a more serious tone then?
Yes, it's a serious tone, and they shot it in Austin, Texas. Like in the beginning, I thought it was like, eh, but then I got what they were doing and where they were going, and they made it all work. But I think it's just one of those things where, man, if we had a little bit more money and we could hire a couple of other people, you know. Danielle, Ivana Ploeger is in it, and she's really good. I was impressed with her.
Okay.
Yeah, I know people are like, oh, who are these people? What are their names? You know, and it's like, well, watch it and find out, man. you will get to know them, too. I think it was a really good low-budget indie film. I like the poster too. I mean, like it all. I think it all worked. It's just, I definitely wouldn't mind seeing it again. I was impressed with what they did and their idea. And like, okay, what can we do for a slasher film that hasn't been done yet or is a little bit different? So the same old, same old. And this is it. So,
how did you watch this one, Bill? Like, where did you watch it?
Netflix.
Okay.
Streaming.
All right.
Or is it Netflix? 59 with that LIX at the end.
Isn't I don't know, Bill, but I was inducted into the Pen 15 club recently, so
ooh. Nice.
I think Gore Blimey will like that one.
I hope so. Gore Blimey, love it. I am Gore Blimey on Twitter.
Yes. You know what, Bill? My last one is one I think I've brought up in passing on the show before, but I'm not going to say much about it.
All right, cool, bring it.
Because so much of this movie hinges on going in with as little information as possible to fully appreciate where it winds up going.
Wow.
And that is 2002's Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance.
Oh.
What, Bill? That's not the reaction I was expecting from you.
This is my favorite Chan-Wook Park film, man.
So yeah, and it's part of his Vengeance trilogy, which I also have Lady Vengeance, which I haven't watched yet, and mm-hmm. I found Old Boy at Second and Charles yesterday. So
who would sell that? Like, that's a keeper, man.
No, I know. I saw that. I was like, yoink, I'm taking that.
Yoink.
I even made the sound effect and everything, and people looked at me all weird. So,
well, because it's usually zoinks if you're a Scooby fan.
Yeah, well, and then my legs like ran so fast in place for a second as I left a trail of dust out of the store.
DM Elms would be proud.
Jinkies, yeah.
Totally.
But yeah, Bill, you think highly of this film, and
very much. I think it's epic in its storytelling scope,
and that's a big part of it. But the thing is, it's like, the thing that impresses me about Chan-wook Park is just the way. Yes, he structures the story well, and he co-wrote it with like three other guys, but he doesn't structure something well at the expense of character.
Exactly.
Or you know, in the emotional payoff. This film is hugely visceral, but it's also hugely affecting in an emotional sense.
Yes.
Because the characters who seem extremely disparate, and you wonder to yourself, how are they going to cross paths? And they do in these consistently ingenious and sometimes painfully, fatally ironic ways.
Quite.
It's just how did he do that? It's just, he makes it seem so fucking effortless, and I'm just like,
yeah.
I just like sat there in awe, because like for the first half hour or 45 minutes I was sitting there thinking, yeah, I can see where this is going. Then all of a sudden, within 5 minutes, he like turns a dial and everything like shakes and changes. So
oh, yeah.
I'm like, that is fucking awesome. Because he did that, I think, with he did the same thing with Thirst. He did the same thing with Stoker, you know, which is, you know, I'm just kind of in awe of this guy. So
am I, man. I love him. He's one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, and I can see why. So, I mean, I know I'm a bit late to the party with Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, but if you haven't seen it, yeah, it's a 4.5 out of 5 film for me. I'm looking forward to rewatching Old Boy and watching Lady Vengeance as well. Bill, mm-hmm. we should probably do a show on Chan-wook Park at some point.
Director of the Damned, sure.
Yeah, we did one on Mike all those years ago, so...
Yeah, with all his films, that should have been like a 20-parter.
I mean, we could... actually, since we've done that show, Bill, I think he's made 50 more films, so we could do another one. Yeah. But, I wanted to go out on a strong note, and I think that's a pretty
all
strong...
All right, man. I think that is strong. So, oh, wow. I'm like... Yeah, so I guess it's scream out time, Johnny.
Yeah, let's scream out to some randos, Bill.
Yeah. Our little hodgepodge scream out. These are people you could follow on Twitter. Hold on, let me see. Okay, hold on. Let me drink something first so I don't screw this up, and I will anyway. Seltzer. Apple-flavored seltzer. All right. First person that you can follow on Twitter is Louise Sorensen, and her Twitter handle is Louise3Ann, with an E at the end. And she says, I am a part of all that I have met. Tennyson, sci-fi writer, Joker, keeper of the zoo, web surfer, and my following you is not an endorsement of your beliefs, damn it. And she's out of Ontario, Canada. That's real Jilly G territory up there. And you can follow Louise at louisesor.wordpress.com. Strack Web Design. Who's that? That's Strack_W_design. He is a web designer, and he builds modern professional websites. And check him out at admin@strackwebdesign.com. He's an awesome guy. He's the guy behind Hell in Space. If everybody knows that. Yeah, there we go. Louise G. White. She goes by LG White Author. She's an award-winning and Amazon best-selling author of the Gateway series, urban fantasy, YA, paranormal romance. And you could find her stuff on Amazon, of course, and go to her great website, louisewhitebooks.com. She's out of the UK. We like that. a gentleman I had the pleasure of working with yesterday on a project that you will hear about soon, a project I had the honor and pleasure of working with Vicky Spiegel, who is in the night doc, and a wonderful listener of the show. And Owen was there. It was great. He's a perfect actor, and I mean that when I say it. He never has to audition. He will always be hired by me for anything I do. And that is Owen McEwen Quest. He's an expressive actor with voiceover chops who brings your scripts to life, and that is no lie. He loves audio drama and indie film. He supports them. He's in them. And you can catch him in the, and this is also on Twitter, RY Indie Film. It's coming soon. And go to his excellent website. Check out his reels at owenmcewen.com. Never mentioned this person before on here as a scream out. She's a wonderful soul. She's been supporter of the show for many, many moons. And that is the great Dawn Hill. And you can follow her on Twitter at Dawn Hill Designs. She's a jewelry designer, horse whisperer, gardener, tea lover, mom, wife, making sparkles that bring joy and spiritual connection. And she's out of Torrington, Connecticut. And go to her wonderful website, dawnhilldesigns.com. But now we get dark, Johnny. We go dark. We go with the Dark Universe, and that is DUHD News. The Dark Universe, horror database that's active news and entertainment source for all of your horror needs. And you can follow them on Facebook at DUHD News, on Instagram, and also at DU-HD.com. Scare Me on Fridays. Who's that? That's Symmetra Rhodes. And she says, I also have a silent movie blog, which she does, and that's Silent Weirdness, W-I-E-R-D. And yes, it's spelled wrong on purpose, she says. So to learn more, just go to scaremefridays.blogspot.com. Dead Horse Horror. What's that? It's an unfiltered, uncensored podcast for all things horror. Fuck that, Johnny. But anyway... It's hosted by RJ Telhorst, Chris Smith, Nathan
so
Smith,
close,
and Ken, no it wasn't, and Kent Sylvester. And the tweets come from Alex. They're out of Dallas, Texas. And you could also follow their podcast, Dead Horse Horror, on iTunes. And the last one, but not least, Midnight Horror Show. Who is that? That's Spooky Movies, damn it. They are a horror movie review site. And you could sign in to rate and review horror films or have us review yours. So you could follow them at krgr.tv for Twitch Horror Gaming, and also go to their website, midnighthorrorshow.com.
Nice.
Nice indeed.
Where can people find you, Billy?
Oh, they could find me right here at crashpalaceproductions.com. That's the website with links to this show, as well as wonderful articles from wonderful people like you. And they could also follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And they could also go to Redbubble for the Crash Palace merchandise, which includes the Last Knock merchandise and all that fun stuff. And more weird stuff coming soon, actually. So. Sorry, go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, you can find me and my pathetic attempt at a diabolical laugh on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bill, I think due to the fact that it's the end of summer, I'm going to check myself into the Amazon hot box and try to drop some weight.
If not, Tristan Risk will beat it out of you.
I would look forward to that, actually.
Oh my God, Johnny.
Beat me raw, Tristan. Beat me raw.
Well, that's great. You know, she was following me on Twitter. Now she probably isn't.
She's following me too, so we'll see what happens.
It was all Johnny, Tristan. It was all Johnny. And on that note, wait, hold on. Where am I? Oh my God. All right, Johnny. On that professional note, we'll edit that out.
All this professional, Bill. Come on. What are you talking about?
All right, man. You have a good one.
You too. See ya.
All right. Bye.